Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Thanks to Mike Pesca for filling in on Friday. Hope everybody had a good weekend. And as Washington continues to digest the Rand Paul filibuster and the sequester budget, we begin the week with USA Today Washington Bureau Chief Susan Page. Hi, Susan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. It's great to be back.
And I gather you were one of the few people in Washington who might have actually known that this Rand Paul filibuster was coming. How did you know?
Well, we're doing a weekly newsmaker video interview on USAtoday.com. I'm stunned that you haven't been watching it. It's called Capital Download. And in the middle of February, we did an interview with Rand Paul in which he announced that if he could not get an answer from the administration on this question about drone use within U.S. borders, he would filibuster John Brennan. And that is exactly what he ended up doing.
How do you like that? And I want to talk about the line that Senator Paul seemed to purposely walk between the principled civil libertarian and the willfully paranoid, if I can put it that way. Like when he said this about Jane Fonda during the Vietnam War era.
No one will ever forget Jane Fonda swiveling around in North Vietnamese armored guns, and it was despicable. That's one thing if you want to try her for treason, but are you going to just drop a drone Hellfire missile on Jane Fonda?
So Rand Paul from the filibuster, to which John McCain, no fan of the filibuster, replied.
To somehow allege or infer that the President of the United States is going to kill somebody like Jane Fonda or someone who disagrees with the policies is a stretch of imagination, which is frankly ridiculous.
Well, yeah, Susan Page. So did Senator Paul actually mean to suggest that the government would target peaceful political protesters with drones?
You know, he talked for 13 hours, which is a long time to keep your mouth running. And I don't believe, given the entire context of his remarks and our interview with him, that he actually thinks that the United States would use drones against people like Jane Fonda or people like Tea Party protesters. I mean, that's another suggestion he made during his filibuster talk. But I think he was trying to make the case that there ought to be some limits and there ought to be some transparency to the use of drones against American citizens. And that is something that, at the moment, of course, we know that American citizens have been targeted abroad and killed by drones with very little transparency. And this is an issue that he has really adopted and that, you know, some Democrats have adopted as well.
So, listeners, now that you've had 3-4 days to digest the Rand Paul filibuster, whether or not you actually were glued to C-SPAN 2 on Wednesday night and early Thursday morning or were following it on Twitter or what, or if you've just heard it filter through the media over the subsequent days, now that you've seen clips, heard reactions, watched it scramble the brains of left and right around the country, what do you think? What was important there? What was, you know, kind of bull there? What does it make you think or feel or want to say out loud? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Susan, I want to follow up on exactly what you were just suggesting, I think, with respect to Tea Party supporters. Do you think that Rand Paul's Tea Party supporters understood that the most likely U.S. citizens to be killed by drones in the scenarios that he was laying out are the most radical Muslim Americans working on attacking the U.S. in terrorist attacks? Or did his supporters conjure up, you know, Tea Partiers like themselves protesting Obamacare or something?
You know, I guess the honest answer is I don't know what Tea Party supporters think about that. I don't think that the Tea Party's agenda, the Tea Party's agenda is mostly a smaller government. It's not so much protecting civil liberties. I'm not saying they're against civil liberties. I'm saying that's not really the energizing impulse for the Tea Party.
No, but part of the very, you know, small government agenda of at least some Tea Partiers, which connects, let's say, with the NRA supporters' agenda is government is going to get us. Government is going to oppress us. We have to be wary of our own U.S. federal government.
you know, I understand your point, but Brian, you know, I think that there are, I do not think this is a position or an issue that is directed at Rand Paul's Tea Party supporters, who do exist. He has Tea Party support. I think it's directed at his Libertarian supporters, which are, they're overlapping circles, but they're not identical, and they're not driven by the same set of issues. I mean, this is Rand Paul, the Libertarian, talking, and I don't think it's, as I said, I don't think it's really a Tea Party position. Mm-hmm. But in response to your question, no, I don't think Tea Party people who listen to Rand Paul support what he says, like what he said about drones, are thinking about radical Muslims. But I don't know. I also don't know that there's a huge thread that thinks that President Obama will use drones against Tea Party protesters. I haven't really heard that when you talk.
Yeah,
to
I was just wondering, you know, what people were conjuring up, because I thought it was really curious watching Hannity, for example, celebrate Ron Paul to the max around this peacenik filibuster, and watch MSNBC try to portray him as a wacko as he fought for what is essentially their issue, a slowdown, in Bush-Obama extrajudicial war on terror practices.
So
he scrambled both sides.
Wasn't that the best thing about the Rand Paul filibuster? The way, you know, things are frozen in Washington down these lines and these partisan lines, and I thought it was terrific the way that this created problems for people on both sides.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if some of the people who were cheering him the most loudly realized that he was also against the killing of U.S. citizens on foreign soil by drones, as actually happened in that one case of the U.S.-born al-Qaeda leader Anwar al-Awlaki. We'll be talking about that in more detail later in the show. But his father, Ron Paul, was the most outspoken member of Congress, as I recall it, against that drone strike in 2011. Rand was against it, too. Do you happen to know if he even brought up Anwar al-Awlaki in his 13-hour filibuster?
You know, that's an interesting question, and I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I guess I assume he did, because it's such a big example of what is now happening, what has actually happened. And in the foreign relations committee hearing that was instigated the question about whether the president could order a drone strike against a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil. Of course, that case did come up over and over again. But whether he mentioned it during his 13 hours, I don't know. But he mentioned just about everything during his 13 hours. It's hard for me to imagine that he didn't.
Right. And so this leads me to the one other question that I want to ask you your opinion on before we take some phone calls. Do you think – I mean, I'm a little amazed about this buzz regarding how Rand Paul raised his profile with the filibuster for the Republican presidential nomination for 2016. And I'm skeptical, because if he holds basically the same set of foreign policy views as his father, Ron Paul, he'll never win enough Republican primaries to get the nomination, will he?
You know, I would tie that question to the budget talks, because I'll tell you, something has happened to the Republican Party. You know, the White House calculation on the budget talks was that Republicans would never accept the defense cuts that were included in those automatic spending cuts, the sequestration. And the Republicans, as it turned out, were happy to accept the Pentagon spending cuts in the sequestration, because it is a different Republican Party. And I wonder if that opens the door to someone with less muscular foreign policy views than they traditionally have had.
Well, people don't – I mean, I guess, yes, different foreign policy views than Republicans have traditionally had. But here's how far he goes. I was Googling around over the weekend, because I had way too much time on my hands, to see how close he is to his father on various things. And remember those Ron Paul smackdowns with the other hopefuls in the Republican presidential debates over who was the aggressor in the conflict with Iran, right? Mm-hmm. Ron Paul said, it's us. And there's every indication to me so far that Rand has the same set of views. So did you know, Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, know that in September, the Senate passed a resolution declaring that Iran would not be allowed to get a nuclear weapon. That Iran would not be allowed to get a nuclear weapon. It was a resolution. It passed 90-1. Guess who?
Well, I only knew that this morning because once I heard we were talking about Rand Paul this morning, I was Googling around on him. So at least two of us are Googling around on Rand Paul. You know, Rand Paul, Ron Paul was out of the mainstream of the Republican Party. And there are issues like the one you just mentioned, like Iran and the its nuclear program and what the U.S. role ought to be with Iran's nuclear program, on which Rand Paul is out of the Republican mainstream. But he is less out of the Republican mainstream. He is a more credible contender than his father was. And I'm not saying he gets the nomination. I think that'd be really hard. But I do believe he's running for the nomination. I think he plans. He told me he is serious about running in 2016 for the Republican nomination. And it is a friendlier Republican Party in the wake of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and with the rise of the Tea Party, he is a more serious contender than his father ever was.
Billy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Billy.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
All right.
I just had a quick little snippet on rent. I actually sat and watched a good 8 hours of his rant because in every single arena that I've seen him, he's a man of flagrant hyperbole who really doesn't get to his core message, and he does himself quite a disservice by, you know, things like the Jane Fonda quote and attacking Hillary during the Benghazi trials. I just thought that was way, way, way too far beyond. And I also don't really agree that it is a new Republican Party we're looking at. We're looking at a Republican Party who has finally realized that they are completely inept, that they are looking for any person in any arena, whether it's Marco Rubio or even Rand Paul. And I think that until we can get away from this political showmanship that takes us so far away from the core issues, even guys like me, I mean, I'm 25, until I see somebody who stands in front of me and gives me an honest rhetoric and ask the right questions, the Republican Party will never get my vote, and I am a pretty fiscal conservative. It's just a disappointment.
Billy, thank you for your call. Frank in Chester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Frank.
Hi, thank you, Brian. Brian, I just want you to know I have a tremendous amount of respect for your show and the way you conduct it, but quite honestly, calling Rand Paul or his followers wackos, I think, is below the pale. I mean, the reality is
I didn't call them that.
Well, you insinuated that in fact they were somewhat out of the mainstream. And the reality is that what we're talking about here is the Constitution, right? And I find it offensive when quite honestly, I think you're belittling the people who I think in many ways are trying to defend the principles of our Constitution. You know, there's two people in the Senate that I really happen to have a lot of respect for. Is Rand Paul and Bernie Sanders. Both of them stick to their principles. Now, I'm not saying I agree with either one of them, but I do think that, you know, it's below you to take and really, in a sense, almost verbally intimidate people who have a view that possibly you don't agree to, and I just think you should know that.
Well, I actually agree with you about Rand Paul and Ron Paul sticking to their principles more than most politicians who blow in the wind and blow with the campaign contributions, and Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul over the years, and now Rand Paul are lining up on some issues. So I'm not sure exactly where you're coming from, because I take your point. I was raising questions, though, about whether Rand Paul as a politician was maybe being purposely misleading to some of his potential Tea Party leaning supporters as a political act.
Could you stand for 13 hours and keep a constant, misleading dialogue? I don't think that's the case. I think the man really stood up there because he truly believes that our Constitution is being somewhat shredded, all right, by what I consider to be a government, not on both sides. Mm-hmm. Who decides policies based on what they think is best for them and not based on what I think is an important part of our country.
Frankly, I actually agree. And, I think that he was raising a very, very important, even if hypothetical, issue, and that it grows out of what a lot of civil libertarians were very concerned about ever since the Bush administration. There's been a lot of commentary that his filibuster demolished what was left of the Bush Iraq war era policies. But so let's, Susan Page, let me follow up on Frank by asking you about him standing up for 13 hours, talking about something that he really believed in, which I completely agree that he really believed in it. Why did he choose this out of all his views? Because we know that, you know, again, the Rand Paul, Ron Paul set of views, very libertarian on economic issues. as well as on these kinds of foreign policies. And this was a hypothetical, even though you could say, and I would say, it was a very principled stand. It was a hypothetical on one narrow piece of foreign policy. Out of all the things that the polls stand for, why did he choose to make his 15 minutes or his 13 hours of fame on this?
I'll tell you what he said when I asked him that question. He said, it's because I cannot believe the administration will not give me an answer on this. He had asked the Brennan and submitted a question after Brennan declined to answer the question directly in his foreign policy, in his foreign relations hearing. Is it legal for the president to order a drone strike, an assassination basically, on a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil? And he could not believe they wouldn't answer the question. And frankly, you know, I was at a town hall meeting last week at the Reagan Library, and I was seated next to Olympia Snow, the former senator from Maine, who is about a Republican about as far from Rand Paul as you can get. And she said, why is he doing this filibuster? And I said that, and she could not believe, she said she could not believe that he was not answer, that the administration was refusing directly to directly answer that question. And it was only after the filibuster that the administration, that, that the Attorney General, Eric Holzer, sent a letter saying, no, we do not think it would be legal for the president to do that. I take him at his word that the fact that the administration was unwilling to answer this direct question was the reason that he chose the most high-profile forum that he could command.
And by the way, in case Frank thinks that I'm just defending the Obama administration or something, I still don't think the Obama administration has answered his very principled question, because that little statement that he got that night or the next day, which said, no, the U.S. cannot target U.S. citizen noncombatants with drones on U.S. soil.
Yes.
What's a noncombatant?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the issue there is if there's someone who's engaged, I mean, this does leave an opening there. But I think the idea is if there's a terrorist with a bomb and a drone could take him out before he detonates a bomb, then in that case, you could do it. I mean, it's all hypotheticals. It does leave the door open, but at least it was a direct response. And if you saw the Brennan answer this question or not answer the question, it was like a cloud of smoke around his head as he answered it. So clearly the administration hoped not to answer this question, and it's because of this filibuster that Rand Paul staged that they did answer it, at least to the degree that they did.
Dan in Warren County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dan.
How are you doing today? My thing is that when the President of the United States is sworn into office, he swears at the end of the oath there to uphold the Constitution against enemies both foreign and domestic. Somewhere along that statement, I believe that he's saying, the Constitution is saying, yes, an enemy of the United States in a domestic situation can be targeted by the government to be stopped. Now, a combatant and a non-combatant are two different things. I would think the enemy would be the combatant. The non-combatant would be the criminal. That's the law enforcement that go after them. And the government says already, the Supreme Court says, you can take offensive actions against a criminal to protect the people around you. That's simple to me. I don't know why it took 13 hours for him to try to express that, you know.
Dan, thank you very much. And in fact, we're going to get into that question and related questions more in the next hour of the show, asking, for example, well, if anybody is targeting the U.S. in terrorist attacks, why does it matter whether they're U.S. citizens or not U.S. citizens in terms of what military law would allow the country to do in response? But Susan Page, before you go, I also wonder about the impact of this real filibuster, if I can call it that, on all the fake filibusters that Washington has routinely, where they can block the Senate from action by declaring a filibuster on paper, requiring 60 votes rather than 51 to do anything. Did Paul inadvertently give the Democrats an opening to attack the legitimacy of the modern-day non-bladder-dependent filibuster?
That's a very interesting category of filibuster. I hope it comes into common usage. You know, I think he did give ammunition. If he could stand up and talk, why can't others? Also, kind of a message to politicians looking for a forum. This is a forum that really worked for Rand Paul. But, you know, the Senate made the most modest of limitations on the filibuster this year by mutual agreement. They limited some of the occasions in which these invisible filibusters can be waged. And some of the newer members of the Senate are very determined in pursuing this to try to limit this, the way that filibusters are now used at no cost to a senator and really gumming up the works in Washington. So he may have done that. And that may be okay with him. I mean, Rand Paul does not strike me. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. I don't know if he's used the invisible filibuster in other, the non-bladder dependent filibuster on other occasions.
Did you get any indication when you did this video chat with him whether there are any other things that he might now set out to filibuster next? Is this going to be a hallmark of, you know, Senator Rand Paul's tenure?
No, he said, this is an issue. I can't believe they wouldn't answer the question. That is why I'm going to filibuster.
All right. Well, I'm going to start watching your video series now. Between every episode of House of Cards, I'm going to kind of toggle back and forth between one of those and one
That's
of your
great.
Washington videos and one of those.
Well, this week's guest is Tammy Baldwin, the new senator from Wisconsin.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
going to do that this afternoon.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Coming up next, we complete our first round of candidate interviews with all the candidates running for the Democratic and Republican nominations for the mayoralty of New York City. It's Adolfo Carrion, the former Bronx Borough President, former Obama Urban Affairs official, who's now trying to run as a Republican. Stay with us.